PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
Welcome everyone out there to episode 10, double digits of the Off Course Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Rob Miller, aka Rob Miller Time out there on social. And with me as always is Canadan Golf on social, mostly on Canadan Golf and Canadan Golf 82, if I'm correct, if I remember correctly. Happy to have you with us. We've got a big show today. We're going to talk what everyone wants to talk about, and people haven't gotten enough talk about him lately, is Bryson DeChambeau. And then we're also going to do some rapid fire later, and then maybe get into some iron lofts. So before we start, I want to say welcome, Dan. How are you doing today?
Good, buddy. I find it interesting that you got the full Rob Miller name on the intro and all I got was Canadan. It's like, am I in like Phil and DJ status where I don't need a last name anymore?
I'm just not feeling formal today.
Okay.
You know? I got a t-shirt on. I'm good. You know,
I mean, so we added an entire number to our listing of podcasts by getting to number 10. I'm pretty pumped about that. And I love the way this has been going. It's been an absolute blast to be a part of.
Yeah, I think we've had a lot of fun, and we hope that everybody out there has as well. Want to remind you before we get started to also follow Dan Edwards' co-hosted Range Days. How's that? Was that good?
Loved it.
All right, another podcast and also a video podcast, so you can check it out there on YouTube. And of course, Golf Unfiltered. And make sure that you subscribe to THP Radio. Hit the subscribe button wherever you are following us. Helps us out a lot, and that way you won't miss a thing.
I can't decide if we did ourselves a service by not bringing Adam on for this conversation, or whether we just didn't want a 3-hour podcast.
Oh, I'm sure this would be a big one. You're right. It would be the Lord of the Rings of golf podcast. It'd be pretty damn long, I think.
So, as we did last week, because the tour is back, very exciting. This is our opportunity, and Off Course has become one of those experiences where it's like two guys hanging out after a round of golf, talking about some of the more ridiculous things that happen on, around, or about golf. And I love that. And what's great is because the tour is back, we now do it while watching golf. So we have the RBC Heritage on the TV, and I actually just watched Gary Woodland pump one down, and it is still rolling, which is very topical for us. But one of the biggest impacts I had from last week, Rob, what, and I think everyone did, the talk was no longer about one length for our good buddy Bryson DeChambeau.
No, length in general is the talk. that's what we've kind of evolved into. Yeah, it was, first of all, seeing him for the first time was shocking. I mean, for me, what did you look at him and say, you know, what the hell happened?
Well, yeah, I mean, we had some fun. Good buddy Jeremy, JD Talks, had a little bit of fun at my request using Photoshop. We put him on the Rocks body, which was pretty funny. And I even got confirmation from Harry Arnett, who had a long-standing, I think, Twitter profile with the same image. He allowed us to use his likeness and his strength of arms there, which is a very entertaining experience for me to talk about that. But yeah, I remember
seeing that in his avatar. Now it dawned on me.
He looks stacked, man. He's put on probably 40 pounds of pure muscle, and he's swinging akin to a long driver out there.
Yeah. I mean, we talked a little bit last week. I think it was last week about him hitting over, 200 ball speed. And he was, low 190s, I think, is the highest measure that I saw last week. But it was amazing to watch, especially since, I've heard so many things from instructors that, really your key is lower body. And, Bryson works out everything, and he's having 5 to 6 protein shakes to keep his weight up and his muscle mass up every day. I mean, it's insane. And I have to say, I admire the guy, regardless of how you feel about him and his quirkiness and so forth. When he decides to do something, he does it. And he follows through, and I do admire that.
Do you remember as they wrapped up last year's PGA season, he made a comment saying that he'll look completely different for the upcoming season.
Yeah, he said something like that, right?
Yeah, that was his comment. And I remember looking as the wraparound began, and he was out there playing, and I said, he doesn't look that different. And then this whole Rona thing happened. Everyone disappeared for 3 months, and he comes back, and he just looks jacked. I think he left his neck in 2019 by comparison to what we're used to. But, I mean, good for him for continuing to push the envelope as it relates to his abilities, because he is a student of the game. He is a student of the golf swing, the mechanics that go into it. Obviously, if you've seen him putt, no one would putt looking like that if he didn't have a real reason to do it. But from a tee ball perspective, he is taking this to a whole nother level.
Yeah, there's a. It's funny because the USGA, when they came out with their distance study earlier in the year, and distance is kind of ruining golf, and there's so many layers to that onion, right? It's basically, hey, these courses were designed to play driver 4-iron, and now guys are hitting driver wedge into them. Bryson has decided to eliminate architecture completely. And just know that he can just destroy the ball over everything. Did you see the video on Twitter that was posted by someone down in Harbortown where he actually had to drop back like 30 yards in the range? So everybody is up in a line and Bryson is like 30 yards behind them. And he can hit driver while at the golf range. So it's insane to see how much distance and how hard he swings with that ball and how straight that ball goes.
So one of the things I want to touch on before we even get into how he's doing it is we had some pretty fun, seriously intense conversations after the Distance Insight report came out from USGA talking about how product is there needs to be potential rollback and that equipment over the years has overpowered golf courses. But it's interesting that we can sit back and watch Bryson, who's his numbers have changed dramatically, not just this year, but ever since his first year on tour, where he weighed next to nothing and was still kind of learning how to put together the perfect swing for him from a fully optimized shot perspective. And now he's gone about it in a way that kind of validates what my opinion was and a lot of opinions in there, that it's not so much the equipment alone that's driving this exceptional distance. Players are more athletic, they're more in tune with their swing, and they're just generally more capable of accomplishing those things from a purely athletic standpoint. And I think that is having a much more impactful effect on the distances we're seeing on tour.
I think you're absolutely right with that. And if you look at it, I mean, you look at Bryson's physique, has there ever been a professional golfer that looks like him right now? I mean, I'm not talking long drivers or gimmick things or whatever. I mean, he hits the ball as far as Jamie Sadlowski practically and looks completely different than, you know, Mr. X Factor there. It's phenomenal. And we've got this now, we've got this distance report by the USGA, which is talking about a lot about equipment, and we're not in favor of bifurcation and this and that. And then now we're talking about, oh, wait, Bryson's too strong. That has nothing to do with equipment. It's just that he's strong as hell and he's just going to overpower things with brute force. So if this does work, you're going to see golfers coming up like really lift, I think. I think it's really going to happen. It's interesting that we got it in this short amount of time because the pandemic must have helped him and helped his cause. Because everything was shut down, I don't think we'd see as drastic a difference because he just wouldn't have enough time to donate to it.
So this, I feel like this further validates that in total. My question is, for a guy like Bryson, who's had this dramatic change and he's now swinging at exceptional speeds, do you think his body can withstand such brute attacks?
I mean, no one really knows that, but you know, you are just hitting a golf ball. I mean, that's all you're really doing. It looks so uncomfortable. Actually, to me, most of what he does is uncomfortable. Like his putting even makes like Keegan Bradley feel uncomfortable, I think. You know, that's what Bryson's his like. But I don't think it's going to stop him at all. It definitely could become a problem if you get injured, but that's happened with everybody. Look at Jason Day. I mean, what a beautiful swing, a lot of torque there. And you see what's happened over and over again. So I think it's really interesting. Bryson is just completely trying to say, all right, these are your rules. And I'm going to beat the system. I'm just going to use your rules and I'm going to figure out a way to beat them, you know, beat everybody else that's out here.
So I heard a statistic from last week that one of the days he had less than 100 yards on 10 of the 18 greens hitting in. And I'm assuming we're removing the par threes out of it. So it's now 10 out of 14 greens. That's pretty telling.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, let's just dive right into the grow the grass argument and so forth. So, you know, they'll grow the grass and distance and 50 yards a roll. Yeah, I get it. I've seen it. You know, these guys are really smart. They know their swing. They can decide to hit a draw to maximize roll as well. And I know they can power fade it with the best of them. But when you look at it, Bryson is just, he's just carrying the ball so high and so far. None of that makes that. None of that with carry is going to do a damn thing, because longer rough. These guys are not afraid of longer rough, and they know that PGA Tour is not going to beat them up every week with longer rough. Because then, what about the major championships? Then you don't have a difference between, you know, the Heritage and the U.S. Open as far as like playing conditions. It doesn't make any sense. So I just think the, you know, roll back the mower argument is kind of futile.
Well, before we get too much into that, I started a conversation on the THP community last week, which was a little bit of a different take. We've got some big solutions, some small solutions to resolve this problem, which I think at this point is pretty recognizable that it's purely at the tour level. It's not really an amateur concern for golfers. So if there is a need for rollback, it would absolutely make no sense from an overall perspective to do that anywhere other than the major tours. My thought was, why not make it harder to hit those perfect shots? And here's kind of where that stems from, Rob. You see most guys on tour still using player-based irons, and there's probably a really good reason for that. They can do whatever they want. They can control however they want, but they have to be very precise. We watched the coverage this morning, seeing guys try and hit shaped irons. If they overcook it, they overcook it. It's a miss. It's in the bunker instead of being on the green. It's a bit of a struggle. What surprises me and tells me there's a problem is that these guys who are extremely good on tour are not using smaller heads. We've seen it from a driver perspective, still in the iron, still in the wedges. But when you get up to driver, where they used to hit at 430 cc's not 5 years ago, now they're using these 450, 460 cc drivers and swinging at will with little fear that they will miss a fairway. Do you feel like they've gone a little bit too far in that? Do you think that the idea of rolling it back to the point where he's saying tour drivers will still continue to make them and accessible to everyone, but will cap that size, the tour driver size, at 430 cc's?
Well, you're automatically bifurcating some rules there if you do that. I don't know if the USGA will do something like that, but I think these guys are so good, and I think you said it yourself, they use blade irons because they hit the center of the club face all the time. They don't need that, when I have a miss hit, I worry about this not going as far, you know, like the typical amateur golfer like myself. That's what I look for. But with them, they're trying to hit a specific distance, flight distance, and also landing characteristics, right? They're trying to hit their windows and get their ball to land on a green. It's a precise club. They can do that. So I don't see how going to a 430 cc driver like and those do exist, I don't see how they're going to, it's going to cause them any problem whatsoever, because the manufacturers can just, you know, the core can still be up there. They'll do CT testing. It'll be just as hot. And the places on the face where you and I might hit it, they just don't hit it there. It doesn't happen.
I've heard that claim a number of times, and I'm hard pressed to buy it because we don't have statistics on it. And I remember talking with some OEMs not too long ago as to why they made the transition, and it was encouraged by a lot of the guys on tour, which I thought was interesting, because once again, you're looking at this from a totally different perspective than how the golfers perceive irons. You have to assume that 460 is a representation of forgiveness more than anything else.
Well, yeah, if you have the maximum, to manage MOI, it's really just like with a putter. The bigger the putter, the more forgiveness that you can put into it. You can't do it with a smaller putter. You have to move the weight further away from the face. So I think if I remember correctly, talking with Nike Golf back in like 2014, they said it might have been even a little earlier than that. But as far as the tour player, the tour size, I'll say tour driver split compared to the 460 was about 40% in the smaller head, 60 in the larger head. So even back then, yeah, there was I don't know if it was necessarily a movement, but they said some of their players like Paul Casey were like, hey, why not get more forgiveness if I can? I might as well, you know, they hit it like just as well, essentially. So you might as well have that that forgiveness with you. But I still don't think that if they had to go to a 440 or 430 head, it would cause any problems. I'll tell you, they'll find a way to solve it. I, for myself, I played an SLDR mini, a tour version that was a 2 point, it was 10.5 degrees of loft. And that sucker, when I hit it, even though it was 43 inch shaft, would go almost as far as my driver. And I remember being on a golf trip and my buddies, I was actually out driving their ping drivers and everything, because I was hitting it on the sweet spot. Like every time, it was just maxed out as far as launch characteristics. These guys are much better than I am, so I don't think that'll do a thing.
That's interesting. Do you think that Bryson would be able to swing with the reckless abandon he has been with a smaller head? You really think it's non-impactful whatsoever to make that change?
I think with 30 cc's is nothing, you know. I don't think that'll do anything to it. If you're saying drop it to mini, well, I guess maybe, but I didn't watch him take too many fairway wood swings, but I would bet you he takes them the same way. He looks out of control. Like it's wild. It's just phenomenal.
Huh.
You really think that he can, if you give him just 30 cc's less, right? Make it that much smaller, which is, what is that? Not even 10%.
Well, you look at, and I love using the M1 example from TaylorMade from not too long ago. If you look at the comparison between the 460 head and the 430 head, there's definitive differences between the two. And you have to make concessions to create that smaller, slightly more compact head. Even if it's incremental, even if it's a marginal change, I think it's a positive one, because as players get more and more accurate, you cannot continuously, because clubs are becoming super forgiving overall, especially drivers. I mean, maybe not when you go out hit with your boys, but when you watch these guys on tour, a lot of the times you see these balls just blitzing down the middle of the fairway, but then you see these errors and the errant shots where they would normally, and maybe it's a ball thing, maybe it's a lot of factors, but where they would normally go flying off the planet, it's just not really happening anymore. So if we can draw that back a little bit, we can bring it a little bit closer to Earth than what it is. I think it's a positive change. And I definitely think it's a better change than something ridiculous like Jack, I hit it longer and everyone for that long, Nicholas, who says roll the ball back. I don't want that kind of impact to the game.
You went after Jack.
I absolutely did.
Oh, that's rough for me to take.
Why is that? You would rather see the ball change than drop in 30 cc's in a driver?
Well, what we're trying to do is change, essentially change, make the, I think the distance argument overall is golf architecture is this, and I'm not an architecture geek at all. I'd be hard if I play a course for the first time, I'd be hard pressed to remember like what hole was this and that. Like, it just doesn't register with me. If you're, you know, you want to play this hole is supposed to be driver, long iron approach, right? Look at Augusta National, right? Everything back then, it was like driver, long iron approach, risk reward to maybe get on the par five and two. Maybe they're even using a fairway wood to four approaches. Now it's not like that at all. The whole field can essentially reach every par five. And is there anything wrong with watching the Masters tournament and birdies on the back nine on Sunday? It's one of the most awesome things in golf. There's no rough there. The grounds you walk as a patron are better than the Muni in your hometown, you know, better than the fairways at the Muni. So I don't think that if you're going to change, you know, that grow the grass thing and so forth, that's not going to change the way the game is played. It's just going to penalize people. And that's fine if you want to watch people hack it out of the rough and so forth. But if you want to change something, make it a different ball. You make that ball to where you have to control it, like in the days of old, because that thing is going to go offline. And once that wound ball would start going offline, like, forget it. It's like, you know, Lee Trevino said, right? You could talk to a fade, but a draw won't listen, because there'd be some wild shots out there due to the nature of the golf balls. And I think that is the number one thing that you would change the game. If you want to change every shot and how it's played and make it play like it was, the architecture was intended, that's what you do, is change the ball.
So let me get this clear. You don't want to change the distance with which a ball hits. You want to see guys out there playing worse golf.
No, I didn't say worse golf. I think if you can control an older wound ball, I mean, I posted some videos out there on YouTube of Tiger Woods talking about it. If you can control the older balls, then you are a ball striker. You're truly a ball striker.
Yeah, so talking about hitting it on the heel, right? But yeah, you can't hit a new driver on the heel, man. If you hit it on the heel, it's going to go down the middle of the fairway, just shorter.
Exactly, because the driver is more forgiving than persimmon, obviously, and the ball doesn't curve. Yeah, he talked specifically about that Jack Nicklaus used to actually shave his driver a little bit to give him a little bit of that bulge and roll effect, a little bit more on the heel. And on the, like, when the tournament was on the line, he purposely hit his driver along the left side on the heel. And that ballada ball would come back into the fairway like every time. That was his kind of like go-to shot. And now if you do that, you're in the left rough. It just doesn't curve that way. Can they curve the ball? Yeah. But a lot of this, because of the new equipment and the ball, it's become a straight shot game.
So I think we're talking about two different things here. The primary conversation out there is distance. Distance is a problem. Distance insights, distance, distance, distance. Where I think you're talking more about the ability to control golf ball overall, which is really interesting, because Rob, I'm no purist. If these guys want to win golf course or golf tournaments at minus 30, I am more than happy to watch it. What's that?
You're down with it? All right.
I love it. I don't want to watch these guys play bad. I don't tune into golf on TV to watch them play like my Saturday single or Saturday buddies play. I have no interest in that. I want to see guys obliterate golf courses. My primary concern is when, simple example like last week, where it used to be a shot shaper's golf course, now it becomes a hit it over the corner golf course. So are there other elements that we can incorporate to say, yeah, maybe this design isn't great from this, but what is the real solution? You put a giant billboard up that says Merrill Lynch on one side where they can't actually aim to that tree.
Like a Green Monster Sitco.
Yeah, man. I mean, and you know, that would be a little bit more difficult. But if you look at the way that some of these courses are designed, you could easily justify a grandstand in a certain place where the player, or the people, or the patrons are still back, but you have a line set up where players simply cannot hit on that ridiculous line, and they're forced to play a more shot shaping.
Are we turning this into holy moly out there? Is that what you're doing?
Holy moly.
You're building structures like a giant mini golf course to
that's that's the real question, is where can you draw the line where it's still golf, but you force these players to use the course that's designed, not just hitting over trouble or around it. I remember there was a, I don't remember where or what or how, but it was a golf course where some dude hit a one iron underneath a set of trees into another fairway to hit up to a par five. And within a day, they had planted a tree in the direct path of where that guy hit it, because he hit it to a different fairway. It simplified things like that, where it doesn't negatively impact the presentation. How quickly can we adapt to that for some of these courses who do have a lot of character, but not when guys are bombing it over top of corners rather than around?
Oh man, you said a mouthful. First of all, you know what Holy Moly is? You know Holy Moly on it? It's a, oh yeah, you don't like have cable. It's a crazy mini golf like game show thing on ABC. And it has Joe Tessitore and Rob Riggle are the commentators.
Really sounds like I'm missing out here.
You're not. I try to keep everything a Riggle-free zone, but I figure I'll mention them. We got into someone on Twitter doesn't like when I'm, or tries to send me Rob Riggle things all the time because it's not my favorite. But anyway, that's what I'm talking about. But I understand they try to close a loophole and plant a tree. You can't do that with everybody. I mean, are we trying to make all these golfers the same? It's crazy. Why don't we play with handicaps? You know, some guys are going to hit it longer.
Let me get this straight. The guy who wants to change the ball says we can't change the course. Is that right?
It's, well, the reason with the course, you can't grow the trees. That's not going to happen. You know, we could put up fake cell towers that look like trees if you want to prevent that. But, you know, pros have been hitting over corners a heck of a lot. I mean, it's happened for a long time. I remember McIlroy in like 2011 when he was actually leading the Masters before the meltdown. He was doing that, and I can't remember the hole or anything like that. But there was a good graphic about, yeah, this is their line now. It used to be here, so there was no choice. They couldn't go over trees, so they would be forced to hit a long iron into this hole. Nowadays, they can go right over the trees. They've maximized their launch characteristics. And boom, it changes the way it's played. Courses have you might think that courses have all this room, but they don't. So if you're going to really change the golf courses for the pros, Augusta National's been trying it since Tiger in 97. And they, you know, Tiger Proofing came out and so forth. A lot of these golf courses out there, they don't have this. You know, they don't have the ability to just add 70 yards here and so forth for the pros. It doesn't happen. And I think the fact that the USGA spent all this time studying distance and they came out, here's our results. We don't know what to do yet. Like, they just don't have an idea.
Well, let's talk about fairways then, because distance is inherently a problem more than just hitting it over dog legs. But what I really want to see is, can they extrapolate the difference between carry and total yards on distances on tour and recognize the fact that extremely firm fairways, while penal for offline shots, are incredibly favorable for those who hit good shots, because now you're talking about a wedge instead of a mid to long iron after 80 yards of lumber.
Well, you're talking about, you just said it yourself though, good shots are rewarded. So yeah, there's a lot of role. And sometimes, I mean, when you're talking about like Kapalua stands out to me, right? There's a 700 yard par five or something like that, and everyone hits it 420 or something on that hole due to the fairway and elevated tee and a ton of roll. I mean, so grow the grass, is that going to slow the ball down so much that you're not going to get, so you only get 40 yards out of it? I don't think you can turn 60 yards a roll into 40 by just making the grass a little bit longer. You buy that?
I do buy, in a sense that in here in Ohio, and it's certainly different for every condition. Obviously, Florida is going to look different than California, different than Texas, different than Ohio. But here, there are only certain months out of the year where we see significant roll, and the experience of the course changes. I'm playing clubs that I wouldn't normally play in the spring season when it's wet out. because I'm getting massive amounts of roll when my ball hits. And I think every time, every week when you watch the tour, almost every week, today they noted that RBC is playing a little soft. You see all these tournaments. I mean, last week is a great example. You see these tournaments where the ball hits and then is gone. It takes off like a rocket. It's like a secondary hit once it hits the ground. You know, we're almost talking about efficiency on contact of the ground.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and it's gone.
There are some hard fairways out there. That's true. But you know, I think if you look at it as the longest hitters compared to the shortest hitters, they're still benefiting based on their performance, right? If I hit it and it go well. This is obviously not a real world example, but if I'm driving at 330 and then I'm getting, you know, 40 yards of roll and some other guy is hitting it 290 and he's getting, you know, 25 yards of roll, it's still going to be in proportion to your strength and how well you struck that shot. So
I don't see those big variables between the two guys. You watch every drive on the same hole, and it's all that same low penetrating strike that lands and just plummets towards the green.
So
if you're talking about drawing back on the distance with which tour players hit, could it not make sense that you prepare a golf course where you put a lot of water on it beforehand, not during, but beforehand, and maybe leave it a little bit longer up until the event to where the conditions that hit aren't 60 to 80 yards a roll, you're now talking about maybe 20. So now instead of having 145 into the hole, you have 185. Would that not really draw back a lot of the talk about long hitters? I mean, you're still carrying it. Some of these guys are still carrying it 310, 320, whatever the number is, but they're not finishing at 390. They're finishing at 320.
Yeah, I guess I think you're making an assumption, and anyone who makes that argument is that, you know, this is being done like on purpose to maximize the roll for these players. You know, every tournament is different. Sometimes fairways are different and so forth. I just don't think it's going to have that big of an impact because these guys kind of figure it out. All right, well then what do I need to do? Do I need to hit the ball just lower? With more, so it's with a draw in order to get maximize roll. I mean, I don't know what roll is because my course is next to a swamp, like literally. So I hit balls last week that actually bounced back out of their pitch mark, you know, off the tee. So that's not something that I'm super concerned about. Maybe you're giving me some ideas. Maybe I need to be concerned about that. I just don't see. I can understand you get saying, oh, this roll is ridiculous. Yeah, it's ridiculous, but everybody's playing the same course, so that doesn't bother me as much.
It's not so much about playing a variable here. It's about someone making a claim. One person with pleats and you know, baggy golf shirt made out of cotton says guys are hitting it too far, and it's sure they carry the ball pretty far, further than they did 30 years ago, but conditionally speaking, I think if you don't take consideration to how far the ball's landing and going after it lands, it is one of the easiest ways to alter the overall distance that a player hits it. As you mentioned, your course is wet and not firm, and if you were to play the same course with extremely firm conditions, you would experience probably a positive impact, would you not? Hitting shorter irons and everything.
Well, yeah, of course. It's easier. It's much easier for a longer hitter. I totally agree. But there's difference in skill level as well. You know, there's someone could, instead of bulking up like Bryson, add 2 inches to their driver and maybe hit it as long as he does.
But it's not about the long hitters having an easier time. It's about, I'm asking from a personal perspective, would not golf not get a lot easier for you if you were playing firm fairways than soft ones?
Yeah, at least 64% of the time, according to the stats.
So why not take that into consideration on tour? Instead of changing a ball, instead of changing the CC on a driver, instead of making all these significant changes to bring courses back into relevancy, why not just encourage them to say, hey, if you don't want your course to be overpowered, don't make your fairways extremely firm?
Okay. Well, you're talking about one shot. You're talking about a tee shot with the driver. That's
yes,
what you're talking about.
That's correct.
Gary Woodland had a recovery shot, I'll put out there for a future episode that watching an awesome recovery shot is the best thing in golf. That's the best shot in golf. Like somebody who's way off course, like you and I, when we talk, and that them putting it back in play is one of the coolest things. And maybe that's the me loving Tiger so much because you could watch so many of them. But anyway, Woodland was in a different fairway. He hit a 190 yard 9-iron over a tree because he needed to hit over some of these trees in order to get back. And he hit it on the green. I think it was over water too. It was ridiculous. So that's a shot where you're saying that isn't a problem because you're talking about distance and courses playing and so forth. So how does the fairway have anything to do with that? It doesn't. That's why my ball argument, that's why I say all you have to do is a spinnier ball that everybody has to use. And that's that stuff will change real quick.
That's pretty interesting. But from Gary's perspective, 190 is not his stock 9-iron. 190 is nowhere close to his stock 9-iron. So when you take a risk at playing a stock or a 9-iron to 190 yards, the risk reward there is massive. It's I don't think relatable to just blasting one down. And it doesn't just need to be drivers here. Think about all the utilities that are being used on tour now. They hit it 240, 250 in the air and it lumbers to 300. Well, now you're making every par four that's somewhere between 400 and 480 yards not all that hard because you have an extremely accurate iron that just lumbers as soon as it hits the fairway. If you take that bounce out and you limit it quite a bit, now you're only getting 260, whatever the number is, out of this utility iron. And now you have an extremely long shot into the green. So you're making accuracy less of a premium you're making a shot like that be less viable for someone and in forcing them to play a slightly less safe shot. And again, I understand the idea that firmer fairways means that if you make an error or the shape is wrong, it bounces into the rough, yada, yada. I'm not worried about that. Again, I have no problem with someone hitting the fairway and having a fairway lie. That doesn't bother me. What bothers me is the idea of genuinely changing the game, the product, the things that allow companies to have success, which is new tech performance. You need to find something there that changes. I think it's more impactful to the game than saying, hey, your conditions are a little bit ridiculous. These guys shouldn't be bouncing the ball the way they do. It'd be no different than someone aggressively watering or underwatering a green. At some point you hit a max and you say, this is either too easy or too hard. And I think fairways are ridiculous right now.
Yeah. I think it's just, that's such a small part of what's kind of going on with everything and the distance debate that, yeah, if they watered them and then they also decided to grow the grass a little bit in the fairway, that's fine. Would it bother me? No. Would it bother pros? Probably at first, right? I mean, you know that there's that aspect of it which we don't hear about. So that could happen. But whether they'd enforce that is kind of crazy. You know, the easiest thing for these guys for a course to do is kind of, you know, make their greens play more challenging. And I think you see all the time of, it comes down to a putting contest. And even, you know, I had a round years ago with Hank Haney, and he was talking about it. And he said, one of the things that made Tiger the best golfer he's ever seen is he would fly the ball all the way to the spot that he wanted it. That's what he would do. And if you look at like Arnie and, Gary Player and so forth, you know, Jack would do largely the same thing, but those guys would run the ball up to where they wanted it to be, you know, that wouldn't carry it all the way there. And that's one of the things that gave him an advantage because, you know, the U.S. Golf game is basically the PGA Tour game is get the ball in an area on the green and make the putt. I mean, that's what it comes down to. There's not as much creativity as the past or, you know, Open Championship kind of thing.
So I have one follow-up question to this, and you mentioned potentially using a different ball. Now, when I was talking about using a different driver, I caught a lot of heat saying that it would be harder for companies to market that product. And I wanted to make a comment here and say that let's not pretend like the guys on tour are using heads that are pulled off Dick's Sporting Goods shelves, right? It's just not happening. They get specific heads built for tour each week, and they have a little tour stamp on them or whatever they are. They will always be a little bit different. So the assumption that if there's a different size, which already existed in the past, we have to understand they're already different. And I want to counter that to you by saying, you talked about potentially using a different ball. How do you think a company like Titleist, who splashes their product on every single leaderboard out there saying, this guy has a Titleist, this guy has a Titleist, do you think consumers will feel that, do you think they'll be satisfied with the idea that they can't sell that same ball to consumers because it would make no sense for a consumer to use it?
I think there's always marketing ways to get around it. You know, like the fact that, you know, with this Titleist ball, which is legal, you would hit it the same as, you know, Bubba Watson or something like that. You know, they'd have some commercial along that. It definitely, I think there, you know, if we're talking about bifurcation there, and I think that with every kind of adversity or wrinkle that gets thrown in there, there's also a marketing opportunity. And I think they would, it would kind of suck for them at first, but they would figure out how to do it. You know, knowing that you can, cause they can market it in various ways. I think it would work. It would get tricky. In a way, it would be a pain in the ass for manufacturers because then they'd have to run two lines, but then they could, you know, they would probably say, why don't you just let us, you know, go crazy again. And, you know, like an ERC2 driver or something like that. I think that's the bigger argument, and would be positive for a manufacturer is whenever you can create a new product, but no one is going to say, hey, I want a ball that, you know, Tiger's using on tour, so it would go less distance for me. Can I have that?
That's the thing. Bridgestone's currently saying you want to use the ball that Tiger plays. The biggest selling feature of Pro V1, Pro V1X for years has been, this is what the guys on tour trust. You can't say that anymore. It's not relevant anymore.
Well, they still trust it. It's just not the same model. And there are different models of, you know, Pro Vs that are out there. And some say, hey, I'm using the 2018 version. I like that better. 2017. Very few now, but if you remember when the Tiger ball first came out under the Nike name, they put it on the shelves and people found out that it's not the ball that Tiger Woods used. It wasn't the same. It was similar, but they changed it up a little bit to make it more accessible to, you know, you and me. And people were like, no, I want to play what Tiger's playing. And then they came out with the Tiger ball and it's exactly what it was. And I never heard someone say, oh, it's so much better because it wasn't anything.
Yeah, I'm going to say right now that a company like Titleist would flat out lose their mind if they forced a ball change on tour, especially if it wasn't universal.
Well, it would have to be everybody, you know, that it's not an easy thing. And I haven't done my research as far as, you know, there was the Open Championship way back when. It used to be a different ball. You had to play with a smaller one. And a lot of the pros, I think you had to go over there on ship, you know, it was a bit of an effort to get there. Pros did not want to go and play the Open Championship because they didn't like playing with a completely different ball. Then who knows how many manufacturers were making balls back then? I'd venture to say there was only a few.
Rob, we have taken this conversation very, very long, and I know we had planned to do some reader questions today, some quick hit stuff. Do we have a name for this yet?
I was just going to call it rapid fire or just banging balls,
banging balls,
just like
banging going
to the range, banging. No, definitely like, N apostrophe, because you know, you go to the range and you're just not even thinking, you're not practicing with a purpose, just bang some balls. That's basically what this is.
Well, let the people speak.
Yeah. If someone has a suggestion, that's fine. It doesn't mean I'll take it anyway. Anyway, here we go. Let's go to our mail segment. I've got some, we had a thread out there on Hackers Paradise Forum and people submitted some things. So I'm going to start off with Oh, this is right up your alley, buddy. It's about rules.
Yep, I'm in.
Tevener says, should OB rules be deprecated in favor of following more hazard unplayable lies? Big Dill agrees. He was going to post the same thing. Should all OB penalties be the same as current hazard rules? And also wants to know if you have any tips on how to hit the ball from the bottom of a lake or pond. And this is an interesting other take from OG Puttin' Fool. How about, should I always advocate changing the rules of golf to make the game easier, or should I embrace the game in all of its challenge? So what do you say about that?
There's too many questions.
I'm
going to touch on OB because I think it's a really interesting one. Courses have the freedom to select what they believe to be a hazard and what they believe to be out of bounds. And I think most of the time, outside of the places that use it to define their playing area. So for example, a location that would make it significantly easier to miss into and then hit into the green. I think most of the time OB is used to protect the surrounding areas, homes, for example, driving ranges, not just protecting the area, but protecting the idiots who would think going in the middle of a driving range to hit their shot is a good idea.
Yeah.
You know, so I think in most cases, OB is very critical to respectfully playing around a golf course. But I do think there is a new rule, which we actually implemented at our golf course. It's a suggested potential rule that allows players to no longer deal with stroke and distance. It allows people to go to the point of entry, head back to the fairway, drop a ball, and play from a two-stroke penalty there. So it would be effectively like hitting a second ball from the tee and landing it in that specific area. This eliminates the things like having to go all the way back to the tee, having to stress about hitting the exact same shot off the tee. It does make the game a little bit better from a recovery standpoint, personally, like mentally, but you still definitely get punished for hitting those errant shots in places that the golf course definitely doesn't want you to hit them.
Yeah, I think that was implemented last year by USGA, right? There's that optional. There's that option.
Exactly.
Which is good. I was explaining it to someone just 2 weeks ago when we were playing. He had no idea it existed. Yeah, but just understand it's two strokes.
It's course to course. Yeah, not always guaranteed.
Yeah, and it's not one. It's you know, it's not like you can't just play that way.
Right.
Okay. That was a lot. I will say I got screwed by out of bounds in my friend's yard once. My ball was literally 3 inches into his yard. And I'm like, oh, are you kidding me?
And that, can I get a ruling here?
Yeah. So, I mean, it had nothing. I mean, it was a perfect shot into the green too. I no problem. And I just had to take my medicine. All right. Speaking of eating something, NV Golfer 80, Nevada Golfer, I assume, is does peanut butter and jelly sandwich require grape jelly?
You're sure he's not just a big fan of the NV shafts from Aldola?
Could be. I don't know.
I'm going with that. What was the question?
Does a peanut butter and jelly sandwich require grape jelly?
Based on the last 2 years of my eating habits, absolutely.
Yeah, I'm going grape jelly too. I mean, if you want to have something, just don't go like marmalade or something. It's just
If I'm just having toast with no peanut butter, I would definitely defer to strawberry for some reason. But once you incorporate the peanut butter, grape's the play.
And a little butter on that toast?
That's asking a lot.
Really? Got a layer.
I don't know. Dressing it up. Way too fancy.
That's my thing. I assume
put a little sprig on top of something too.
I'll assume there's an egg on the plate.
Yeah.
All right. TRA024. If the golf associations across the world would wake up as true hipsters and only allow walking with a Sunday bag and 10 clubs, what would your 10 club setup look like? And what gaps would you be most worried about?
So what's in my bowling bag? Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, so if you have your you now have to lug your clubs around in a quiver.
Yeah, in a quiver.
Really super cool, expensive quiver. And you had 10 clubs. Like what would you take out and probably miss the least? Again?
Let me speak out by saying that if golf ever got that ridiculous, I would retire. And I will use the term retire, not just quit. I don't know, man. I'd probably dump at least one wedge.
I think you'd have to.
I would probably transition into more of a driving wood than a driver. I still got two more.
Really? Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, what's the point? You know, I can just move up and not stress about distance. Probably drop my hybrid because I use a utility off the tee for that lumbering bounce off the fairway. It's jacked up. And then I don't know, man. I don't know where you go from there. Probably just stretch out my irons a bit, modify some of the lofts and dump, I don't know, four iron.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, so I think I would have answered this question a lot differently, but I decided to put a hybrid in play this year, and like a dope, I took out two clubs to put one in because I never counted. So I've been playing 13. It's Sunday bag conversation, really.
Just got real easy.
Yeah. So last year I probably would have said I would have my like SLDR mini, that 10.5 degree in there instead of the driver, because occasionally I'd hit it off the deck too. But that's a rare occasion. I would keep the driver. I would keep the hybrid. I drop the fairway wood for sure, because it's really worth like one or two shots around for me. That's it. And then there's a 50% chance it's a bad shot, just off the fairway with me. So that's not a big deal. I drop the four iron. That's easy. I'd get rid of one wedge. It would probably be the 54 that I'm playing. And then, I don't know if it, I guess I could dis an iron, but I think that's kind of it. I think that would be four for me. Fairway wood, or if I carried two, the four iron, and definitely a wedge would be gone. I don't think I'd have a problem doing that. I wouldn't want to, though. Let's just make this a hypothetical and be done with it.
Easily done. Simple questions, simply answered.
Yes. Speaking of questions, we've got one from JB, who's a first time.
His first time, long time.
Fantastic. Why do mock turtlenecks look like a bad circumcision? I'll hang up and listen. And then Kev says, what's worse, a mock turtleneck or actual turtleneck? And then another follow-up question is, the mock turtleneck or blade collar worse?
Yes to all. They all need to disappear.
Yeah, there's a chart, and they're just really, really bad. Those are bad. I think to wear a mock, you know, you've got Tiger wearing that mock. I still remember when he was battling it out with Cabrera in the U.S. Open. He had that mock. He just looked huge, right? He looked just massive and intimidating. And then you've got like Paul Goidos, you know. So some people can wear the mock, and I don't. I have looked through all these Name the Pro images, and Gary Player and Jack were wearing them back in the day, and it looks pretty sharp, you know. They got the coif like nice and tight up there and everything like that, and they look pretty good. But still, let's get rid of them.
Let's put them all in a big old pile. Get a little gasoline on there.
Yeah, Price,
and light it.
I don't think Bryson could fit his head.
I would allow Bryson to wear one purely for the memes on social.
Yeah, he should go blade collar. You might as well own it.
I'm into it.
That would be.
That's a big sell for me.
Phenomenal.
Better him than me.
Okay, let's go to. Boy, there's a few here. So D Nice 26, he wants to know if we could add, and this is something we might consider in the future, but how about adding a helpful tips portion, like something you guys have learned from being an industry insider or just your own experience, et cetera. So I'm going to ask you, is there something, being an insider, you've learned that's a tip from somebody that is super important to your golf game or other people could learn from?
Go to every single demo day you possibly can. Research the product you are interested in before doing that, and commit to experiencing it for yourself.
So try before you buy.
Research, try, buy.
Well, as a male golfer, I research the hell out of everything. You know, there's just so many things to search out there. So that's good advice, though. That's for sure. I don't always follow it, but it's good advice.
From an insider who doesn't follow it, that's good advice. Yeah. Well, and we're hanging up now. Bye.
You just gave me the advice. So I have to show that I learned something.
All right, let's do one more.
All right. Well, here's my tip for everyone out there. I got one tip is that Johnny Vegas was doing a demo one day, and he said that on the PGA Tour, basically everything within 5 feet, they treat as a straight putt. So they hit it with enough pace to take as much break out of it as possible, aside from like crazy greens like Augusta. That's about it, because they're not worried about comebackers. So I would think that if all of us just practice our 5 footers with pace, we'd be a lot better putter.
And for the next 2 months, everyone, your next putt's good.
Let's see. One more. I like this from Chef Critter. What's more fun to watch, the Corn Ferry Tour or college golf?
Well, I don't watch the Corn Ferry very often. So my favorite time for the college golf is when they get right to the end of the season and play in those big tournaments, and you see how excited they get as a group. And that's, yeah, for me, that's very fun to watch.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'd rather watch college golf. I think it's a lot more interesting, especially when you had like Wolf and Hovland. They were like duking it out, and that was really cool to see. I think there's been a little bit more college golf on Golf Channel lately, and I like it. Corn Ferry is kind of like watching minor league baseball. I wouldn't
watch. They hit it a long way, though. It's fun to watch that.
They do hit it the long way. We got next week's discussion is, do they hit it too far in the Corn Ferry Tour?
No, I'm out. We'll have a guest next week. It replaces me.
Speaking of too long, we've hit like 56 minutes, and
yeah, I hammered it. The 10th gives you an hour worth of conversation. I hope you all enjoyed this today. As always, we are both extremely accessible on social media. I'm getting better every day about Twittering. What can I say Twittering if I can't say golfing?
No, you can't. So welcome to the club. You have to come to, it's either both or nothing.
Huh. I can say tweet.
You could say tweeting.
Wait, is saying Twitter versus tweet? Is that like saying golfing versus golf?
Or
golfer versus, yeah, never mind.
I don't know.
Save yourself. Close the app now.
Off course, episode 10. Thank you for joining us. We're going to pick a winner for the giveaway. So make sure you follow us on our Twitter handle and Instagram handle, Off Course THP. That's coming up, should come up Monday. And we appreciate, as always, everybody joining in. Please hit subscribe and join us next week.
Play well, everyone.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.